This is an interview with Margaret Bowman, 1061 Marie Road, Jenkintown, March 6, 1984, with Nora Levin. Now, Margaret, would you tell us a little about your childhood, where you were born, a little about your family, and what you remember of your first 8 or 10 years?
I was born in 1914 in Dresden, Germany, which is now the eastern part of Germany. My parents my mother came from Poland, my father came from Romania. And I think they immigrated to Germany in the late 1890, because all the children, we are born already in Germany. My father, he was born in 1901, and he was born in Germany, so they must have come around the end of 1890. We had a little store, like most of the Eastern Jews had first, and
dry goods or grocery?
No, it was dry goods.
Dry goods,
yes. Mm-hmm. And we children, my father passed away in 1920, and my mother kept the store. My brother took on him to raise us children. We were three sisters, and my brother took really care of us.
He was an older...
He was 1901, I was born 1914. So I was the youngest, I was the baby. So he was very strict with us. And I have to say, my father wanted to be, I think, in the beginning at least, he wanted us to be not immigrants in Germany. He wanted us to be German too.
Was he educated in Germany?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
We were all educated in German.
And he didn't want us to talk with the accent, which he then here did too. But he really didn't. He probably should talk German and be educated in the right way and have the right manners. And,
interesting. Where did he work and what sort of work did he do?
He was a supplier in a very big department store. He had a responsible job.
So it was mother who took care of the store by herself.
Right. And that was until 1930. I was working as a sales girl. We had to finish naturally our education. Then that was already 1928. I took a job and went part time to work and part time schooling.
And what was the nature of the schooling up till 1928?
I would say high school.
Gymnasium.
Yes.
And then a special course after that?
I did not take it, no. I was working. I was a sales girl in a big department store, the biggest in Dresden. And I was working till around 1933. That was the end. And then we moved to Hanover, and we bought two stores there.
We'll go back a bit and talk about your life in Dresden a little more. Did you live with an Eastern European community?
Yes, absolutely.
In Dresden. You didn't have much contact with native-born German Jews.
Only religion you didn't take because I was a Jew. Mm-hmm. Jewish kids did not take religion in school. Right. We had to go, that was mandatory. We had to go to the Jewish school to take religious school, Religionsstunde. Mm-hmm. We had to go there and take religion. There I came in contact with German Jewish kids, not the Eastern ones.
And
the German kids most.
And were they sociable, or were they somewhat patronizing?
No, not at all.
They were not sociable?
No.
Because you were
Eastern.
So you made most of your friends with Eastern Europeans?
Already, you see, the neighborhood alone. I mean, like here, let's say, oh, when the Jews came to New York, had to sleep the lower east side, you were together.
Mm-hmm. And did you belong to a cultist Gemeinde made up mostly of Eastern
Jews? Of Eastern Jews. We had two. We had for German Jews and for Eastern Jews.
So that was separate.
We were not allowed to go to the other ones. We weren't wanted.
You and didn't want to, probably.
I guess so. Mm-hmm. It didn't even occur to me.
Mm-hmm. And was it...
We had a sports club, Bar Kochba.
Bar Kochba.
Right. Now, I think we had German Jews there, too.
And when did you join that?
I was a child.
Was that an athletic group? And was that part of a Zionist movement?
No.
It wasn't. It was just a sports club. And
but we had them separated. I mean, we had them in all cities. We had our games between the cities, you know, like the playoffs.
Yeah, interscholastic.
Absolutely.
What did you play? Volleyball?
I don't think I played ball. That was probably too boring. I mean, we were running. We
running.
Had, you know, like, I forgot the name.
Jumping?
It's all athletic things, but not ball.
Not
but it was a football.
There was
German football, not American football.
Soccer.
Yeah, it's soccer. And my father was very much active. And I think most Jewish people were very active in the sports survival.
This is something we generally don't realize.
Yeah, we were very, very active. Yeah. We had the games too with Gentile
clubs. Do you remember the childhood then as being a happy
very
child?
Happy one.
Very happy.
Very happy one.
In school too, Mark?
Yes, I would say so.
And you didn't encounter anti-Semitism particularly, or you don't remember?
No, I don't. I really don't. But don't forget, it was only the school. I mean, otherwise, I didn't have no neighbors.
I was
in a mixed neighborhood.
If you knew some children, Jewish parents,
probably in the building I was living, which was not one family, it was a like a small apartment house.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think we are probably the only Jews living there.
And so
I was together with Gentile kids.
You didn't feel anti-Semitism?
No.
When did you first notice a change?
I was very tough in 1933 or before the election of Hitler. Before, when it started, like you said, they were standing on the street corners and actually collecting money, and they were very cynical and very sarcastic. They said, we are collecting money to send, give me a mark, a German mark, so we can send all the Jews to Palestine.
That was part of the electioneering, and you remember that?
I remember.
You were already in the room. And in school, did you begin to feel... But you left in 28, actually, didn't you? The gymnasium, so
yes.
That would have been prior to the...
Yes.
How about in the department store? Did you feel...
I didn't really feel it.
You didn't?
No. Employees, it was... business was still geared more to Jews. Now, it was a big department.
Was it owned by Jews?
Yes. I think that the biggest percentage of the employees absolutely were Gentiles. But
we didn't feel that.
No. Afterwards, naturally, we did.
So beginning in 1933,
I had to leave.
You left the store?
I had to leave, yes.
And the man, the Jewish owner, had to give up the store?
Later. If I'm not mistaken.
But you had to leave?
I had to leave.
And other Jewish employees had to leave?
Right.
And your family then moved to Hanover?
To Hanover, and we bought a gumshoe store, which we kept till 1938.
And why Hanover? Was that supposed to be
We were looking for business. No, we were, it didn't occur to us to move out, to leave Germany. So we knew in Dresden we couldn't. There were no stores available.
I see.
And then there were some stores available. We traveled around first a little bit in Köln and Cologne, and we didn't buy there, and then we finally bought in Hanover. And then we bought, in the meanwhile, my father moved away to Vienna. he had his wife was living mm-hmm. there.
So the older brother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was from, she was from Dresden too, but she got married. It was a divorce in Moscow, and he thought he can do it and manage it in Vienna. But then Hitler came to Austria too, you know. But he left before. He couldn't make a living in Vienna. And we purchased two stores there.
Did you know some people in Hanover?
I don't know. I must have been there, let's say, 1934 to 1938. And it was already under Hitler. And my family was there. We were closer together then.
Did you work in the stores?
Yes, yes.
And obviously it was possible for you to own a store still.
Absolutely. My brother, we purchased two. My brother had one and we had one.
Mm-hmm. And you were able to make a living.
Very good living. Until we made a tremendous living.
Even
I didn't have it as good before as I had it after 33.
How do you account for that, Martin? Was there a liberal regime in the city, a liberal mayor?
No, I don't think so. My father was beaten up in Hanover very badly. But I don't know. We had seen the manufacturers. To be in retail business, you have to be a good buyer. And you have to be a good salesgirl or salesman. And I think we were that. We had good merchandise with a small profit. See, you can have a store and you say, I don't want to sell it so much, and I have a bigger profit. Mm-hmm. Or we always wear the opinion, low prices and this larger volume of business.
And margin.
It was very good. We had tremendous business.
And lots of non-Jewish customers.
Especially where we had it. We had two. One was in the center city of Hanover, mm-hmm. and one was the working class. And
many non-Jewish customers, mostly. And you had some Jewish employees?
Yes, yes.
But also some non-Jewish employees?
Yes, yes.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Were you aware of a strong Nazi party in the city?
Oh, gosh, yes.
But they never, they didn't disturb you?
Later on, they did.
But not
I mean, I remember our windows, they were broken in, and
yes.
they were, you know, early already. But I had to swap the streets.
But you were able to maintain the business until 38.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Now,
and then it was so just for the money to get out.
Now, before we come to that, how did the Nuremberg laws affect you, the laws of September 35? Did that make any difference in your life?
We were living in apartment building. We had a Gentile janitor there. The owner of the building was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very well-to-do woman. Mm-hmm. I think she was a widow, mm-hmm. if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a very elegant neighborhood. It was kept very nice, and except I wasn't in contact with Gentile except during during the day, I would naturally, the customers were Gentile. Mm-hmm. But I just remember, then later on, I guess it was after 35,
mm-hmm.
we were not allowed to go to restaurants anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Jewish people opened, like, in their apartments, like a pension.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there to eat.
I see.
Because we were busy with the business. We didn't cook at all.
Mm-hmm.
We went out to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to their homes, and they served meals.
That's interesting. Do you remember anything about the life of the Kultusgemeinde?
Yes.
Was that still active?
Very active.
Through the middle
30s? Absolutely. I heard singers, which I never heard before, and it was very cultural. We still had our life, I think more probably than before. Because we were, Dresden was a very cultural city. But we were very together.
Mm-hmm.
We felt probably better too because we were together.
Yes.
We weren't exposed. The fear naturally was in us already.
But
and we weren't exposed. We were together with other
people. We were united. Yes. Do you remember anything significant about the rabbi? Was he an important influence in the community, or any other leaders?
Not particularly. No, I was not that good.
Mm-hmm. But you remember the cultural activity?
Yes.
And that
I remember much more the Orthodox, or the little steeple we attended to in Dresden.
In Dresden.
That it was tremendously impressive.
It was.
Tremendously.
And as a
fondness, I look back in fondness.
Is that so? Because it was warm
and it was
informal.
Kind of family.
The family.
Of the men we are sitting there, the women we are sitting there. I remember very well.
But even as a child, you liked that.
I loved that.
You loved it.
But I think it was more the surrounding, the closeness,
mm-hmm.
than the religion,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, I think that's probably true for a lot of people. But did you attend, or did your family attend the synagogue at all?
Yes.
Sure, yes.
Not in Hanover.
But not in Hanover.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we did everything like I do it here too. I mean, I have Yom Kippur, I have Rosh Hashanah.
But you didn't go to services.
I know.
You don't remember?
No.
Uh-huh.
Now, we ran that order. We children, we were anti-religious.
Yeah, I understand.
And,
but your family had to belong to the Jüdische Gemeinde, didn't you? You had to pay taxes.
We did.
And
otherwise,
so
you went, did you? You had,
yeah,
I mean, we wanted to be
yeah,
Jews.
You wanted to belong.
We didn't want to be non-Jews. Gosh, no.
Now, in this latter period, I'd say 35 to 38, during those years, was there any discussion of the possibility of leaving Germany?
Absolutely.
There was.
I was the main point.
And how did you come to that decision?
I had in Dresden, which we are very distant relatives.
Mm-hmm.
One girl got married to a fellow in South America.
Mm-hmm.
That was already after 33,
mm-hmm.
shortly after 33.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved to Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And she had, this girl had two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And the youngest one was my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And after 33, they moved. I think it was 1936.
Mm-hmm.
They moved the sisters, asked them to come.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of people already was a Nazi party. And they moved to Chile. Then they moved from Chile to Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And 1937, I couldn't live anymore in Germany.
What bothered you especially, Margaret?
I was very bothered by it all. I was bothered by the Nazi party, the fear which was in a person. Some people saw it and some didn't see it. I guess I saw more than other people did. I felt very, very uncomfortable. And I saw the pogroms in Austria. We picked somebody up.
Mm-hmm.
My sister-in-law's sister was married in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove to Vienna. They didn't have the money. We couldn't send it anymore. It was just unsure.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Vienna to pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was scared to death.
You saw the actual violence against Jews on the streets.
Yes.
But in Hanover itself,
there was violence.
There was some violence.
But still, they did let us live.
But you just had a sense that things were going
I
to get worse.
It anymore. After I became back from Austria, that was it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to my girlfriend in Peru, that was 1937, and came back to Germany, 1938, I left.
You made your first trip in 37?
To visit her.
Right. Now, what was happening to the family in
they
Hanover? Were they thinking of leaving, or did you have to try to persuade them?
In 37, no, because I didn't want to come back. And they sent me a false telegram to come back.
You didn't want to return to Germany?
No, I didn't.
And
I
what
didn't.
Was the telegram?
That my father is fatally injured in an accident, and I have to come back right away.
Oh, my.
And I did.
But
and on the boat, I had a telegram waiting for me that it was a girl. But by that time, naturally, I was on the boat and sailing back.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a tremendous fear. Tremendous fear. The border, crossing the border into Germany. We landed in England. Mm-hmm. And then we went back to Holland, from England to Holland, mm-hmm. and from Holland by train to Germany. And I had a tremendous fear.
Did you have some problem getting back?
None whatsoever.
But your passport wasn't yet stamped
with
the J, was it?
No.
That didn't happen until later.
No,
but you
later
didn't want to go back.
No.
And the family still believed it could survive in Germany, or by
I
the time
remember my father was the one, you know, he was the main person. And
yeah.
By that time, my mother wasn't active anymore in business. She was sickly. She was a very sickly person. Mm. She had a broken hip, and she couldn't walk very well. And it was more my father, and it was financially very rewarding to us.
He was in control of the businesses.
I don't want, how did he say it? I don't want to be somewhere and feel I made a mistake by leaving.
Hmm.
He felt it will pass. A lot of people thought so.
Yes, sure.
And that was his opinion. He always said, I don't want to be sorry that I left. After I left, by 1938, he was the next one to leave.
Aha, uh-huh. So he had changed.
Absolutely.
And where did he go,
Mark? In account of his wife, they came to America while I was in South America, in Peru.
I see. So he wasn't even home when you returned?
When I returned, he was home. That was 1937.
Oh,
1938 he left, shortly after me.
Now, what did you do in those few months between 37 and 38?
We still had our business.
You still had the business?
Absolutely.
And your sisters remained?
My sister remained in Dresden. One was married, had children, they remained in Dresden.
And?
It was my father and I who had the businesses in Hanover.
And so, when then did you leave for the second time?
1938.
And what month was that?
I think it was in June or July.
Before Kristallnacht?
Yes. Yes. Because I couldn't read Spanish. And the newspapers were full. And the people I stayed, my girlfriend I stayed with, she was married and was and had a little child. And they were always trying to hide it, that I wouldn't see it, but I wouldn't have understood it anyhow unless they talked about it. I didn't know anything about it, Nora.
Did you return to South America by yourself?
Yes.
Martha?
Yes.
What happened to mother and you?
They were by that time they were, the businesses were sold in 1938,
mm-hmm.
and they were then all interested
in leaving.
Interested.
I see. And you went to Peru yourself.
Right.
And you wrote to the family, I suppose?
Not did I write. I wrote them out. My uncles and aunts were deported to Poland.
From Dresden. And
my mother was not. My two sisters were not. One was married with the two boys.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't stay in Peru either. I could have stayed. I had the permission to stay. Peru was one of the strictest country around that time.
Mm-hmm.
In Bolivia, we heard that they let people in.
Mm-hmm.
I went alone to Bolivia and tried to get my family out. And sending them already some papers which were not, that I started the immigration papers,
mm-hmm.
gave them a leeway
mm-hmm.
to stay.
They weren't deported. They
had those papers. It wasn't permission yet to immigrate,
Right.
But it gave them some leeway.
So that saved them from the deportation.
Them. And I have to say that the higher saved them too, Nora, because they did, by that time, they did not have the money anymore for all those airplane tickets.
Mm-hmm.
But the higher said, if you can give us half, we give you half.
I see. This is Hyas in Germany.
Hyas here.
Here.
Here in America.
They were in touch Hyas. With Hyas?
I was in touch with the Hyas. I was living in Bolivia by that time. I was in touch.
But you were in touch with the American Hyas?
Absolutely. Not only here, I was in touch with somebody said China gives money. I wrote to China. Somebody said France gives money. I wrote to France. I was in touch with the world to get the map.
You had the tremendous, political
tremendous.
Wisdom, really, to see what
I
was coming.
I had to. Nobody, I here, yeah. It was impossible to get people
oh, yeah.
out.
But I mean, you had the
quota.
Insight
in
to know that it was time.
Yes.
Now, did you hear from your aunt, or did mother hear from your aunt in Poland at all after she was deported? And
that was the end.
Did mother have some vague idea?
My mother came with my sisters, or my family, I should say, except my father who was here. They came 1939 to Bolivia.
Once the aunt was deported, did your mother have some
that was
some feeling that that might be the end? Did she ever talk to you about it?
I don't know if my mother realized it.
She was very sick. No. She was sick.
That actually was the main force behind me to get them out.
Sure.
I always thought if they are transported, which I knew they are, mm-hmm. or going to be in cattle cars, in the
yes.
railroad, and I always thought if she can walk. And then when they say get out and she
yeah.
can't run, they will shoot her. They will kill her. And that was constantly in my mind.
So they were finally able to get out in 1939.
And it was one of the last.
This must have been what, before the war, of course, in the summer of 1939?
I think so. It was end of the year of 1939.
After the war started?
I think so. It was after the war in Poland.
Right.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
So the fact that you had some papers for them, that must
that
have been some key.
And I say to this, the highest too. I really do.
But
because they got the highest here, got from all over all the countries.
Yes.
Who is Harnik? Who is Harnik? Who is that family Harnik?
Mm-hmm.
We got the letter here. The Chinese, they said in Bolivia, give them the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got it. They had to pay it back, naturally.
Yes.
They did pay it.
But they at least loaned you.
They loaned
part
us the money, and I think it was a very good policy, and this way you could get more people out.
Were you aware of others who were going through the same process?
Yes.
And
yes.
Were there many Jews from Germany and Bolivia?
Yes. Not many. I mean, I don't know how many. It is a small community, it's a small country.
But
I think it was a liberal in their immigration board,
mm-hmm.
they were able to come in. We will be always very thankful.
And you lived in what city there?
First I lived in La Paz.
La Paz.
Then we lived in, then I met Herbert.
Oh, you met Herbert there?
In Bolivia.
Mm-hmm.
Then after we got married, we lived in the mining camp.
Mm-hmm. He was already
yeah.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had come through his travels from Switzerland, I think.
He was born in Switzerland, but he was raised in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And then left, like other people left, he left to go to Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Austria, he was caught again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went back to Germany, but all that, it wasn't legal anymore. He, without papers, he went back to Germany and went then to Poland. His nationality was Polish because his father was born in Poland.
Yes, we'll have to get his story,
yes.
of course. So you stayed in Bolivia then with mother?
Yes,
and
my two sisters, and
then
one was married with the two children.
Ah, the sister
yes.
with the two children
yes.
also came?
Yes.
And your brother had already come to America with
America.
His wife.
Right.
So the
end of 1938, he came.
Now, were any of father's parents
yes,
in
yes,
Germany?
Yes.
Father's
yes,
relatives?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
They
got
killed. They were all.
I could not do anything anymore.
Trapped?
Yes. My mother, too, by the way. My
two
mother
sisters.
Had father, and she had sisters. They all got
oh.
back. Yes, absolutely. My mother had three sisters. One father-in-law,
one father, and with children naturally, they all got shot.
And you stayed in Bolivia then for?
From 1946, 45 actually.
45. Mother died there,
yes,
I gather.
In 42.
And what happened to the other two sisters? Did they?
They're here.
They eventually came to America.
Yeah, we got them here too. Yes, at that time, first my nephew came, where I'm very close with him, my oldest sister, Lana. And she came first with him because they didn't belong to the German quota either.
I see.
My sister did, but not my father-in-law. He was born in Romania.
So he came on the Romanian quota then?
No, but he came because Martin was here.
I
was able to get his parents in. He didn't have to wait for the quota.
I see. And you came?
Under the German quota.
Under the German.
Herbert came under the Swiss quota. He had number one. I want you to know.
Number one? Really? Really?
Number one, yeah.
Well, that's some saga. Yeah. Now, life in Bolivia then was fairly pleasant, and you felt safe, or did you feel?
I felt bad.
This is tape one, side two, continuing our interview with Mrs. Margaret Bowman.
Were you able to find work fairly soon after you got there, Margaret?
In Bolivia?
Bolivia, before you were married?
I know. That was impossible. I wasn't able to speak the language. But we did manufacture, we did. It was marmalade, jam, over all those things we tried to, there was really nothing, kerosene cookers, you know, those little.
You did this from your home, from the apartment.
Absolutely. Oh. They worked very hard, Nora. They worked
the
very
whole
hard.
Family
absolutely.
Did this.
I did most of this.
Where did you buy your roll, your sugar and your flavor?
Oh, that you got. You got
locally?
Oh, absolutely.
Whose idea was marmalade?
I don't really know. I don't know.
From a shoe store to marmalade.
Hired a man, he was a salesman, he went from store to store.
Very
you had to,
enterprise.
You had to,
but
and there were some too who sold their Judaism. Catholic Church was very active, in Salzburg especially. Everywhere, the Jews were very without money, without any profession. It was not easy. So they went after them, and they gave them refugees. They gave them money.
They made all sorts of appeals.
Absolutely. They took the money, too. Mm-hmm.
It happens when you're desperate.
When we got to Bolivia, I was talking about it, how tough it was. They're living in a big hall, all the people together.
The refugees.
Refugees. They didn't have food, or they didn't have.
And there was a Jewish welfare agency that
gave them.
And how long? The Hofsverein.
And how long did you have to live there?
I don't think that very long. 2 weeks.
Oh.
And they gave us food too.
And then did you have to find your own apartment?
Yes.
Did they help you?
Yeah. I think so. Yes.
And then soon after that, you started the marmalade business.
Yes.
And it took. It was successful.
Yes, I don't think it was very successful,
but
we are able to eat.
Yeah.
I had to sell a lot of things to pay the rent, but then we managed.
You managed.
The only thing we didn't have, the graves, and we put little material in front of the graves. It was pretty. You thought it was very pretty.
We were thankful.
You can go from the top to the bottom and think it is awfully nice.
In adversity.
But I think it has something to do, too, because you were with all the other people who didn't have.
In the same situation.
It was all right. There was nothing wrong with it. Socially, they had a marvelous life. Absolutely marvelous.
With a sense of comradeship and togetherness.
It was nice. I can look back. If Bolivia wouldn't be so high, the altitude, I would love to go back.
Yes, I can imagine you would.
I would be very thankful to Bolivia.
And Herbert got there by virtue of his work.
No, not really. That was the only.
Oh, that was a refuge for him.
Yeah,
of
course,
a refuge for him.
Yes, and there we met. We were already looking, I think, in the mines and.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time he really had a job where he, in Austria, he wasn't allowed to work, you know. He was very proud of his job.
Of course, not professional.
Very, very, very proud. In a mining camp, it was so. You know, I guess maybe it was a little bit of German, too, with the boots, he had boots.
And a special uniform?
No, that's
no.
Not.
Or some insignia? No.
That's boots.
Did you work if you were married in the mining camp?
No.
And you were able? There was no work.
No, absolutely.
So you must have felt very isolated there.
Well, we had a lot of other refugees.
There were absolutely.
In one mining camp, we had a lot of refugees.
From Germany.
Germany, Austria, Czechoslovakia. And then in Herbert changed jobs, and there were still some Dachau and Dutch people were there. That mine was really managed by Dutch people, and still a lot of Dutch Gentile people. That was the Tino mine, and the other one was the Hochschild mine. That was the Jewish mine, the other one, the first one. And it was Dutch people, and being a gringo and a foreigner, you were sitting together, and you had a lot of American Gentiles there, too.
But there was a community that you could feel
attached. You felt, you were different than the native.
Yeah, obviously.
And so you were together with the
other
gringos, and you had a close relationship.
Now, would you want to say anything to the new generation, the younger Jews and non-Jews who will be listening to our tapes in future years? Is there some message you'd like to leave for them?
I would like to tell them to be aware of evil, of dictatorship, of any movement to the right or to the left, and value your freedom, and watch for it, that you have it.
The most fundamental message that you can give to
anyone. Oh, I thought you wanted to say that's the message that almost everybody
knows. No, not necessarily, but I think that's the
only message.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. No, my pleasure.
Lovely.